It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. And here's the man that does that so well, Mitchell Dye.
Hey, good morning. It's great to be here for another Tuesday on 94.7 The Pulse, and we say a very big thank you to Fred and Cheryl for an excellent country breakfast program this morning. Now, we've got a very big show today. Of course, Libby Coker, the Labour candidate for Corangamite, will join us in the second hour. But first up, we've got Richard Miles in the studio with us, who is, of course, the federal member for Corio and also the Shadow Minister for Immigration and Border Protection. Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mitchell. Now, I've just learned that you are a debating adjudicator.
That's right. It's just another hat that I wear.
Which means that you actually bring to bear an expert opinion on all the debates and discussions that we have.
That's exactly right.
I feel like the pressure is much more on now that I know this about you.
Well, don't feel pressured. It's fine. We have a lot of inexperienced debaters that we adjudicate as well that haven't done debating before. So you're perhaps just a little bit above that level.
Well, okay. Just as long as you keep your judgments and your score. Well, you can tell me off air.
All right. We'll tell you off air. Fair enough. But hopefully this isn't a debate. We're just having a lively
indeed,
chat,
aren't
we?
Of course.
Now, a very interesting start to the campaign. I think it's already day number 10, yeah. And a lot's going on. I'm even struggling to keep up with all the news coming out of both camps, and you were just saying that you've been on the campaign trail a bit. What are your observations?
Well, it is different to a campaign that I've been involved, any campaign I've been involved in before. Of course, we're used to 33-day campaigns, and by the time, I mean, at day 10, we'd be almost a third of the way through, but right now it feels like, to be honest, that we've barely started with 46 sleeps to go. Not that any of us are counting.
No.
I think I agree with you. It has been lively. There's been a lot going on. Of course, we had Bill Shorten down here yesterday, which was very exciting for us. I suppose I'd make the observation. I think it's been a slower start, as you would probably expect, given the length of the campaign. And I mean, there are people engaged with the political process as there normally would be, but there is during an election campaign, and particularly in the last couple of weeks, you really feel people switch on and pay a lot more attention than normally occurs. And I wouldn't say we've hit that point yet, but it's good to be in the campaign and we're enjoying ourselves.
Now, I think that's probably a fair point, but will you have to change things up during the campaign so that people that are following it all the way through don't get tired of hearing the same thing? Like, for the government side, for example, we hear jobs and growth a lot.
Yeah.
Presumably they're not going to be able to get away with just saying that for 55 days.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And so from our point of view, we are trying to deal with various issues and take our time to deal with issues on the one hand. And on the other, we're also, in terms of Bill's itinerary, making sure that he has time to spend in various parts of Australia. So to give you an example of that, last week we very much focused on education and we spent most of the week talking about education, and we were able to go into that in perhaps more depth than you would normally do in a 33-day campaign. Equally, Bill spent most of last week in Queensland, and so he, for the first half of last week, was based in Townsville. And was able to do a number of those seats along the Queensland coast. Now, you probably wouldn't take that time in quite the same way over a 33-day campaign. So, look, in some ways, it's allowing us to go into things in a lot more depth. But I'll share this with you, Mitchell. I had, on the very first day of the campaign, I'm involved in a thing called the Australian-American Leadership Dialogue, and I had lunch with in Melbourne with a former American ambassador, and all the Australians around the table were lamenting the fact that we were facing an eight-week campaign, and she just looked at us and thought that we had no idea that that happens in the blink of an eye, and she's used to presidential campaigns which go for the better part of 2 years. So.
Well, it starts with the primaries, and we're still going through it now, just following American politics. So,
maybe
we're lucky in some ways with this eight-week campaign. But looking at the electorate of Corio, of course, at the moment it looks like it's a three-corner contest. Do you think that any high-profile independents might come out of the woodwork, not mentioning any names?
Look, who knows? And, of course, if anyone wants to run, I think that's great. In some ways, the more people who run in an election, the better. And we look forward to the discussion and the contest with whoever puts their hand up. I mean, from our point of view, it's very much about focusing, if you like, on my relationship with the electorate and what we're communicating to the electorate, telling our story about what we've done and what we would seek to do over the course of the next 3 years. So whoever runs, we'll just keep focused on that as we have been, not just for the last couple of weeks of the campaign, but indeed for the time that I've been in federal parliament. And really for, you know, months now, we've been holding street stalls, multiple street stalls every weekend, usually on Saturday and Sunday. We've been doing a lot of door knocking, a lot of phone canvassing. We had a great announcement last week when the deputy leader, Tanya Plibersek, came down funding the GROW program, which you've probably spoken about on this program.
Yes, before. We have the G21 on, and yeah. Of course, Tanya Plibersek actually came through this building.
All right, well, that's so great. And most of that funding, of course, goes to the electorate of Cori, but not just the electorate of Cori, to the northern suburbs of Cori, Norlane and Cori, seeking to deal with growing disadvantage, I think, and inequality between Norlane and Cori on the one hand and some of our more affluent suburbs on the other. And GROW's a fantastic program. It leverages off the work of Northern Futures, which is an entity that John Aaron and I set up back in 2006, which looks to find employment for people with disadvantage in the northern suburbs particularly, and it was just fantastic to see that support.
Because just to bring the listeners up to speed, at its core, the GROW program is about putting almost a bias on hiring people from certain postcodes which have had a lot of disadvantage and have been shown to be disadvantaged in the past. Yeah,
so it's got three arms to it. I mean, the first is employment, and Northern Futures really plays that role. And as I say, John Aaron and I established Northern Futures back in 2006. Its idea is very simple, that the people of the North, and particularly the 3214 postcode, should get the benefit of the economic opportunities which exist in the North. So it's about speaking to businesses in the northern suburbs of Geelong and asking them what they do and asking them to show a commitment to hire and engage people from 3214 while at the same time working with people who have come from difficult backgrounds to try and get them into a situation where they are job ready. And over the course of the last decade, it's literally placed hundreds of people in jobs. So there's that. But it's also, GROW also seeks to, beyond Northern Futures, seeks to encourage companies to procure from businesses that operate in the North. And it's also seeking to establish a social investment program where money's available to invest in businesses in the North. And together, I think it's a long-term thing. It's aimed to go over a 10-year period. Hopefully we can make a difference. But I think what's really great about it is that it is, if you like, the community leadership of Geelong as a whole saying that it is not acceptable for our future to leave anyone behind, that we don't want to see growing disadvantage, which we see in other parts of Australia and indeed other parts of the world. We at least in our corner of the world, we want to try and make sure that does not happen, and we want to make sure that communities like Cori and Norlane, like Whittington, like Grovedale, like Colac, that they are brought along.
Now, here in this electorate of Cori, obviously there's a Greens candidate. We've spoken to them, and they do seem to be covering similar ground to what you're talking about there with addressing disadvantage and so on and so forth. So the question is, why should people vote for you? How do you differentiate yourself?
Oh, well, I think in terms of ourselves versus the Greens, there are lots of areas of difference. But I think the most significant thing is this. We seek to form a government and to make a difference in people's lives. We are a party of government. So we come up with proposals which are real, which are actually going to happen. We're not a protest party. We're not about complaining about what's wrong. We're actually about trying to make a difference. And that's very different to what the Greens say. And I'll give you a practical example in the last couple of days, I should say. Penalty rates, which was something that got some coverage yesterday and in today's press. The Greens are out there saying that the Parliament should legislate to ensure that penalty rates are there. Now, that sounds great on the one hand. Of course, the Greens will never be in a position to do that on the first hand. But but secondly, how you would actually do that, given that there are different penalty rates applying in different industries and different circumstances, has got every legal industrial expert completely stumped. So this is just a line which sounds good, but which has very little depth to it. But ultimately, it's pretty dangerous because once you walk down the path of the Parliament legislating particular industrial conditions, you are inviting a future Parliament and a future Conservative Parliament to do the same and to wipe all of that away. Now, on the other hand, what we've been about, what Labor's been about, and we've been about it for a very long period of time, since the really just after the first few years of Federation, has been to invest in an industrial umpire. Was the Conciliation Arbitration Court, it became the Industrial Relations Commission today, it's Fair Work Australia, and to seek to have the umpire determine what are fair conditions of employment in Australia. And over the course of the last 100 plus years, that umpire has put in place penalty rates, has realised that there is a disadvantage to people in terms of the leading of their lives by having to work on a Sunday or a Saturday or late at night. And so penalty rates have been built up over that period of time by the umpire, by virtue of unions and others arguing cases in front of the umpire, but ultimately the umpire has come up with those conditions. And our view is we should still trust the umpire, we should invest in it, and what we will do as a government is we will absolutely fight cases in front of Fair Work Australia supporting the maintenance of penalty rates, and we are confident we'll win them because that's where the umpire has gone for more than a century, and that is a much more enduring outcome. But it does take some more explaining. It's the outcome that unions want. It's the outcome that industrial legal experts see. It's not short-term populism, which is what Greens are about. It's actually real government, which changes people's conditions. And I think that's the best way of putting the difference between ourselves and the Greens. I mean, to be honest, a vote for the Greens might feel good for the 5 minutes of the vote, but at the end of the day, it's utterly wasted.
Well, I mean, we've had a lot of discussions about penalty rates. So if we just leave that whole issue to one side about whether or not the penalty rates should be the same on Saturday and Sunday, for example, we understand your position that you would like to retain the status quo. But the question is, you're saying you support it, but at the end of the day, it's in the hands of this independent umpire, the Fair Work Commission, where the Greens are saying we will guarantee it. So you're saying you can't guarantee that penalty rates will stay the same on Saturday and or be different, rather, on Saturday and Sunday.
No, well, what we're saying, and again, it goes to this sort of question of populism. We're saying we can absolutely guarantee that we will fight for penalty rates by running cases in front of Fair Work Australia, and we have a degree of confidence about the outcome of the independent umpire, not because it's not independent, but because it has a history which goes back to 1904, which has seen it be the creator of penalty rates. Penalty rates and those conditions of employment, along with wages, along with hours of work, have all been established by the umpire and have grown up over the course of a century. Now, we don't propose to change that system. The attitude that we take into that system is one of absolutely fighting for and supporting penalty rates, and we have a sense of confidence about that. We get to the same end, except for this, that if we ditch the independent umpire, which is actually what the Greens are now proposing, because they're proposing let's ignore Fair Work Australia and do something different and go to the Parliament. We are inviting every future Parliament where we do not control it. That's every time there is a Conservative government. We are inviting those parliaments to legislate away all those conditions and remove penalty rates. Now, we don't think that's a good idea. That's where the Greens are taking us. So the Greens can't talk about any guarantees, really, over an enduring period of time. All they can say is, you know, they'd put forward a piece of legislation. If it passed, it would be there for a few years, and then it would get ripped away by the next Conservative government. There's no guarantee in that. A much better guarantee is to get an outcome out of the independent umpire, Fair Work Australia, and that's what we would seek to do.
So you say you're basically getting to the same end, so voters can take that as a guarantee that with your advocacy, penalty rates under a Labor government will stay as is. Is that right?
Well, what you get is a guarantee of our attitude here and the fact that we will fight for it. And what we're saying is that we think that there is a much more real and lasting outcome by doing this through the independent umpire. I mean, guarantees that people sort of try and throw out in politics are nice things to say, but at the end of the day, the Greens can't guarantee anything in a long-term sense, even if you got legislation up, because it's the kind of legislation which would be there to be repealed by any future Conservative government. What the only thing we can guarantee is the positions that we take. And what we take are positions in support of penalty rates, and we will fight for them as we always have. And we will fight for them in a smarter and a more enduring way than what the Greens are proposing.
Now, on this issue of immigration, we've talked about this many times. So, again, we don't need to back over those issues about whether or not you support offshore processing. I think you've explained your position quite straightforwardly on that. But the question is that there's been a number of voices of dissent, the most notable being the Labor candidate for Melbourne that sort of triggered this, and they have differing views. So how do you reconcile that, and what should voters expect?
Well, firstly, there is a very clear position that's been articulated by Labor, both in the context of this campaign, but really since our national conference last July. And that is that we will do everything within our power to keep the journey between Java and Christmas Island shut, to keep people smugglers out of business, because we don't want to see people drowning on our border. Now, anyone who watched the debate that we undertook at our national conference knows the seriousness with which we went about this issue, and how big a decision that was for us, and we've maintained it ever since, and it is very, very clear that that is what we will do in government, and there is no doubt about that, and even the voices that you've been hearing don't for a moment question that that is the position of Labor. I think as people try and work out what's going on here, it's well to remember back in the Howard era. At that point in time, you had a number of dissident voices, people like Petro Georgiou, Russell Broadbent, Dana Vale, all actually members of the Parliament. And they had a different position to what the Conservative government's position was at the time. But no one for a moment thought that John Howard had a confused position when it came to immigration and when it came to the question of what to do with asylum seeker vessels. So no one should read any confusion into our position as well. We've obviously had a debate. There are obviously differing views in the Labor Party. No one's trying to hide that. But we have reached a decision. It is very clear. And we will be. That's the decision we take to the election, and that's what we would do were we to be in a position of governing after the 2nd of July.
That was a very well-handled answer. Now, on the budget, we're hearing a lot about this budget repair issue, because this was a big issue at the election in 2013, yet we know when we look at the deficit now that it's just as bad as it's ever been. I think this is the fifth biggest deficit in our history.
Worse.
Also,
yep.
You've seen the budget blow up by $2 billion in the last 6 months. So my question is, will Labor be proposing an alternative track, or perhaps a better outcome for budget repair?
Oh, well, we have been. But I mean, the first point to make is what you've said in your question, Mitchell. If you look at the position that was being articulated by Joe Hockey and the Liberal Party before the last election in terms of what would happen with the budget deficit and what would happen with debt compared to where we're at now, it's triple what was being predicted by Joe Hockey then. So there's no sense in which people can rely upon the Liberals as being sure governors in this respect, because they have produced an outcome three times as bad as what they were saying before the last election. So that's kind of their track record. This is difficult. And I think if you look at the question of the budget and we take a step back and we try and understand it, the budget is in structural deficit for a range of reasons, and there are various decisions which go over the course of both Labor and Liberal governments which give rise to that. We need to get the budget back into a position ultimately of structural surplus, because if we have growing public debt, that is going to be a problem. It's not so much of a problem now. We actually have relatively small public debt as a percentage of GDP compared to most OECD countries. But if we continued as we were by the middle of the century, it would be very different. And it's important that that not occur. With that in mind, and not talking in, you know, apocalyptic terms about budget emergencies and all the rest of it, which is what you've heard from the other side of politics, but in a very sober way, we've said you really do need to look over the time frame of about 10 years, and we've got to start charting a path to surplus where we are making decisions over the course of the next 10 years which firmly put us on that track. So you look at what we've done in the last 12 months. We've announced a reducing the tax concession for wealthy superannuants, a position which has now in kind of a ham-fisted way been followed by the government. The tobacco excise, which is a decision we made last year, a decision which has been completely followed now by the government. The decision we made in respect of negative gearing, which is a very significant decision in terms of helping the budget bottom line. The decision that we took in relation to clamping down on multinationals, again, a position that has been followed by the government. At every point along the way, when it comes to the question of budget repair, firstly, what you see with Labor is an acknowledgement that it's a fair income issue. Secondly, some really serious policy work being done from opposition, I might say, which actually has led the debate. And thirdly, we've got a government which is completely at sea in terms of what they are trying to do here, and their best ideas at the end of the day are our ideas. Like, I don't think an opposition has had such a big impact in terms of decisions that have been made in a budget as what occurred in the last federal budget. The only good parts of that budget were basically the government following us. So what you get from all of that is the Conservatives like to talk a big game when it comes to economic credibility and economic management. The reality is they have been utterly hopeless at it. And in actual fact, it is Labor. Right now, in this election, and over the course of the last couple of years, it is Labor who has been leading the discussion on serious, sober decisions, hard decisions around budget repair, and we need to do that.
Well, Richard, thank you very much for joining us. It's been great to catch up, and I'm very pleased that you've said yes, you're coming along to our candidates forum on June the 20th. That should be very exciting.
And I look forward to your score for my contribution after we get
off. We'll talk about
that
during the break. Good on you.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Richard Miles, the federal member for Corio there.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.